From the studios of EWTN, this is Open Line with today's host, Father Mitch Pacwa. In North America, call toll-free 1-833-288-EWTN. That's 1-833-288-3986. Outside North America, call 1-205-271-2985 or send an email to openline@ewtn.com.
A tremendous Wednesday to each and every one of you. Thanks so much for tuning in to EWTN's Open Line. If you'd like to be part of the program, the number is 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986. If you're outside the United States and Canada, that number is 1-205-271-2985. And we'll even put you straight to the front of the line at 1-205-271-2985. And you can always send us an email. That email address is openline@ewtn.com. I'm Jack Williams, Michael McCall producing the program. Your call screener is Matt Gubensky and Ace McKay handling our social media efforts. So if you're watching us on YouTube or Facebook Live, you can type a question into the chat window and it may find its way to us by the end of the program. And our host is here as every Wednesday, Father Mitch Pacwa. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good. Do you have some emails over there?
Yes, I do.
Do you have any that you'd like to share with us?
Okay.
And maybe even answer the questions that are
Come
out.
On. You just, I just go crazy.
I went
crazy
too far.
Here. All right. This is from Marcus in Malta. Dear Father Mitch, why are they using a synodal church and not Catholic Church? I believe in Holy Catholic Church, not the synodal church. Can you please explain why? Dziękuję bardzo. I think he's Polish, or at least he knows some. Couple things. I don't know why. I mean, synods have been part of the Catholic Church from the beginning. We've had synods. Usually, a council is universal, though, and a synod is local. So a local diocese or local group of dioceses, what we call a province in the Western Church, would have a synod. Now, the terms do get used interchangeably frequently enough. It was, for instance, we talk about the Synod of Carthage or the Council of Carthage, either way, where they decided on the canon. So having synods is part of what's been done. Now, the one issue that we have to keep in mind is that a synod, like a council, cannot change revealed doctrine. It can't, disagree with a previous council and say that council was wrong. When they do that, then they are called heretical. As one case, there was a council called the Robber Council of Ephesus because it tried to reverse earlier doctrinal statements. So that would be wrong. But having synods where there can be a listening process, that is something that is certainly acceptable and not contrary to the church.
So would it be, strictly speaking, more accurate to have called the last couple years' activities a council on synodality?
No, because it's not an ecumenical council. And
But it's not entirely local either.
Yeah, yes, the synods, it's worldwide, but it's not called officially to be a council. We have the councils so far that have existed, and those are called, used for very special reasons, while synods are usually for ongoing maintenance issues, like your city council meetings. Those would be the local one. So that would be a political equivalent versus, say, a constitutional convention. So it's not wrong, you know, it's not contrary to Catholicism to have synods, but they can't, you know, contradict Catholic faith. If they do, then that synod is no longer Catholic and is heretical. So that's the thing that I would say about that. All right.
Bless you.
Here's a question from Michelle. I understand Father Mitch Pacwa is a Roman Rite as well as Maronite Rite. Can laity belong to more than one rite? Thank you. Actually, I don't belong to the Maronite Rite. I am a Roman Rite priest with faculties in the Maronite Church. So that would be a more accurate way to state my position and role. Now, can the laity can go to any church of any rite? You know, you if it's a Catholic rite, you a Catholic church, you can go to that church and join in their liturgies and receive the sacraments. There some sacraments require a bit more, paperwork for various reasons. So, for instance, I could not get ordained a priest in the Maronite Church without switching rites, but I can have faculties. And as a layperson, you can be married in the Maronite Church with permission of the patriarchs. And that usually means you have to go through the local bishops. And we have plenty of that happen, where a Maronite Catholic marries a Catholic from one of the other churches. And so, you know, that can be done, but you need to have permission because, you know, with marriage, they want to make sure that your marriage is recorded within the records of your own proper church so that you don't run around and say, oh, yeah, you know, I want to be married, get married in the Maronite church. And meanwhile, you have a husband or wife in the Roman church, the Ukrainian Greek Catholic, and so on. You can end up with 22 wives. You know, so or husbands. So that's why they want to keep that clear. But you can, you know, go to communion, confession, no problem at all. You don't need any special permission. But a layperson can switch rites if there is good reason to do so.
Once, right?
Once. Okay. Dear Father Mitch, I was wondering what happens to a person's guardian angel if someone becomes possessed. They remain your guardian angel, but they've got a big fight on their hands, you know, and this is one of the reasons we see that fight between the angels in Revelation 12. My son was wondering when we go to confession, why doesn't the priest have an express line for people with three or less sins? Therefore, the priest makes them go back in line. Here's the reason, Terry, who's from Chicago, is we cannot give indication to the other people how many or what sins a person has. We can do nothing. Said express line for venial sinners, line for the mortal sinners, adulterers over. No. We cannot allow any kind of indication of a person's sins to be, you know, out there. So anonymity is a very, very important part. The problem is not so much how many sins the people have, but how much and what kind of counsel they seek from a priest. And sometimes situations require a significant amount of counsel because it's a complicated circumstance. So bring your rosary when you're in line and say your rosary.
Just getting started on a Wednesday edition of EWTN's Open Line. If you'd like to be part of the program, still a couple of open lines for you at 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986. And you can also once again text your question to Father Mitch. Simply text the letters EWTN to the address 58177. Wait for our response, and then respond to that with your first name and your brief question, message, and data rates may apply. 833-288-3986. It's 833-288-EWTN. It's Open Line Wednesday with Father Mitch.
This is Open Line on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. If you have a question, call 1-833-288-EWTN. That's 1-833-288-3986. Outside North America, call 1-205-271-2985. Or send us an email to openline@ewtn.com.
You know, EWTN podcasts are available on Spotify. Weekday shows from the Sunrise Morning Show through Cresta in the Afternoon, plus the latest weekend programming. You can find it all on the Spotify app. To the phones we go. First up today is Ryan, who has been patiently holding on since the last program. He's in St. Louis, Missouri, listening on Covenant Radio. Ryan, thank you so much for holding. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I've become very interested in the life of St. Philip Neri. I was wondering, is there a good collection that you'd recommend of his works? And a good biography that's been written about him also?
I don't know of any collection of his works. Here's one place you can try looking. Go to Wikipedia, of all places, and they usually have a link. Do you remember his feast day? which day is his feast day?
Yes.
Yeah, what is it?
I was thinking of somebody else's. I'm sorry. No.
Oh.
May 26th.
Okay.
May 26th.
All right. So let me just check something in some of my notes. If you go there, I don't have it there. I was looking to check some of my notes, but a lot of times at the end of the article, they will give you links. And I would bet that his writings are online. I would most likely in the original languages as well, and you might even find it in English. Do you read any other languages?
Not really, no.
Oh, okay. I know that there are a couple Italian movies about him, but I cannot tell you any particularly good, biographies. I read one a lot of decades ago, and I cannot for the life remember the name of it, yet alone, I think it was something like Life of St. Philip Neri, but I can't remember the name of it. I know that one of the things, I like him too, he was a jokester. And he always carried a book of jokes with him. Now, obviously, if he has to carry the book, he didn't have a good memory. You should be able to remember your jokes. But one of my favorite stories about him is that he had a big impact not figuratively either, on Jesuit cassocks. Every time he saw St. Ignatius, they were contemporaries, every time he saw him, he would pull out a pair of scissors and cut the button off of St. Ignatius' cassock. And he did this every time he saw the guy. And eventually, Ignatius gave up on re-sewing the button, so our cassocks don't have any buttons. We just have a cincture to hold it together. But I cannot give you any scholarly sources. Did you find anything on that? No. So I just don't know. But try Wikipedia and the Catholic Encyclopedia. But the problem with the Catholic Encyclopedia is it'll give you great book sources, but they'll be older, which is not bad, but be hard to find sometimes. But also, the Wikipedia will tell you of links on the internet where you can find some of the original writings of St. Philip. That's what I would start off with. Does that help, Ryan?
It does. Thank you very much.
Good. Yeah, I wish I had more on that.
You can find the Catholic Encyclopedia at newadvent.org.
Yes.
833-288-EWTN is our toll-free number. Maria's up next, listening on Sirius XM Channel 130. Marie, you're on with Father Mitch.
Oh, thank you. So I have two questions. I don't know if you can answer both of them. But anyway, my understanding of Divine Mercy Sunday is that if a person makes a sincere confession and goes to communion, they receive something akin to a second baptism. My question is, if a few months later it comes to their mind that there was a mortal sin that they unintentionally did not confess, has that sin been forgiven at the time of the Divine Mercy?
Yes, okay. As a matter of fact, not only on Divine Mercy Sunday, this was something Sister Cordelia taught me in third grade, that if you just through absent-mindedness, forgetfulness or something, forget to mention a sin in confession, it is still considered forgiven, of course, presuming that you're sorry for it, but you just forgot to mention it. And what you can do, you can return to communion and such, that's fine, but what was suggested way back in the 1950s was that if you go to confession, the next time you're there, say, Father, I had just forgotten to mention this sin in my last confession, but I repented of it, and I just want to mention it now. So you can do that, but it's still considered forgiven, and you don't have to say, oh, I forgot, I got to go back to confession. No, go to confession in your regular time that you go next, and then confess that forgotten sin when you get there.
Does that help, Marie?
Yes.
And you had a second question?
Yes, a real quick one. If a person for mortal sin to be culpable of mortal sin, you have to commit something of grave matter and also realize that it's a mortal sin or of grave matter. If a person becomes very angry and injures the person in the process, they don't reflect that I'm committing a mortal sin, or you know, what is this going to do to them? Have they, in fact, are they culpable of having committed a mortal sin if they did not have sufficient reflection?
You know, if it's like a spontaneous, you know, striking at somebody.
Yes.
Is that what you mean? Yeah. It would seem. Here's the way I would put it. If you hurt them in a serious way, then that would be serious matter, but the personal intention would not be there. Now, I would still bring that to confession, and also as a confessor, I would suspect that there was a certain amount of underlying anger there anyway that may also need to be dealt with, so that it's not only the act of striking them, but if you hit somebody hard, either you're already pretty mad at that person and you're just lashing out for perhaps past things that have just been building up, or you're mad at somebody else and you just happen to hit this one person. Now, years ago, you know, I used to work with street gangs, and it was pretty tense, you know, kind of work. And if somebody, and afterwards, a couple of things that happened, I certainly had what we now call PTSD. They didn't call it that back in 1970. And in those days, if somebody made any kind of a sudden move near me, I would hit him. I would just react, you know. And I didn't even want to hit him. I wasn't mad at them or anything else, but it was, you know, sort of a nervous, a defensive reaction from having been around a lot of violence for a year. It's the way soldiers would flinch when, you know, they've been in battle for a while and then they hear a pot and pan fall and they hit the ground. You know, it's that kind of reaction. And that's something that has nothing to do with anger at all. And that's not something that is sinful. That's just, you know, one of those nervous reactions. But if there is pent-up anger going on, either against the person another one hits or against other people, and let's just take it on that one person, that also has to be looked at to see how seriously that anger is affecting you. You know, have you become so angry over time that may be of serious matter and needs to go to confession, and that the hitting itself may not be the sin, but more the underlying anger that, you know, put you into that place. That's what I would suggest.
Pamela called in from Piedmont, South Dakota. She wasn't able to hold on the line, but she wanted to know. She says she knows that synods are ancient, but how new of a development is layperson participation in the synods?
It varied from one place to another. For instance, lay people were very much involved, say, in the synods in Poland, right after the Vatican Council. Popes, then Karol Wojtyła, the Cardinal of Kraków, wrote a book, got it to all the lay people, and they had a synod, which really was a tremendous help in implementing Vatican II without some of the nonsense and false ideologies that we often saw. And so lay people were involved then. And at other times, lay people did get involved in synods, but it would have been mostly clergy. And the one of the reasons, not the least important reason, they held the synods in Latin, and you had to be able to speak Latin to participate. So they didn't have instant translators. You just had a common church language. And so it was, fairly rare that lay people would be there. But for instance, at some of the Roman synods, a number of the Roman senatorial class families would participate, including in things like elections of popes and such.
Straight ahead, we'll talk to Lisa in Pennsylvania, Sally in North Carolina, David in Detroit, and we've got plenty of time for your phone calls as well. Pick up the phone and give us a call. The number is 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986. If you're outside the United States and Canada, your number is 1-205-271-2985. It's Open Line Wednesday with Father Mitch Pacwa.
This is Open Line on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
As advertised, we head next to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Lisa is watching us on YouTube today. Lisa, you're on with Father Mitch Pacwa.
Yes, hi, Father Nick.
How are you?
You staying cool?
What's that? Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, today in Alabama is an absolutely stunning day. This could be like September.
No humidity.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Blue skies.
Oh,
wonderful temperature, about 80 degrees.
It's a little warmer than that, but not much.
Not much. So anyway.
87.
So my question is about a Christian friend of mine who is struggling to come into the Catholic Church. However, her family is really angry with her because they became Mormons.
Mm-hmm.
And she, in order to be accepted by them, she was baptized in the Mormon religion.
Mm-hmm.
But she still goes to her Christian denomination. However, she will every now and then go to a Mormon service. My question is for her soul.
Here's now the Christian denomination that she goes to, is that non-denominational group?
Like a Baptist, you know.
Has she talked to her pastor about having been baptized in the Mormon Church?
No. Mm-hmm.
See,
no.
Here's the thing. That would be contrary to the Baptist norms. They don't have a whole lot of rules, but I'm pretty sure that goes against the few they've got. Because neither the Baptists nor the Eastern Orthodox nor we Catholics recognize Mormon baptism as valid because it's not Trinitarian, you know, so we don't recognize it as valid at all. What I would recommend to your friend, I understand the difficulty she has with her family, but there are two things going on. One, she has to personally develop a better understanding of the importance of forming her own conscience. Conscience is not how you feel. Conscience is much more about thinking in regard to the truth and then making a decision to follow the truth simply because it's true, not because it's convenient. So this is something she has to develop about her own conscience. If she doesn't do that, then they will continue to manipulate her. Secondly, once she develops her own stronger sense of her conscience, she has to insist to her other family members, this is what I believe to be true. I do not believe that Mormonism is true. And they have to make their decision. She would not be the first Christian who enters the Christian church and gets opposition from their families. That happens throughout the history of Christianity. So she's just going to have to hitch up her belt and, take that issue straight on. And she has to make clear to them, I do not believe this. I do not believe that the Book of Mormon is sacred scripture, and I don't believe in your baptism. I believe in Christian baptism. And get that clear, but I would suggest that she speak with her Baptist minister and think through what all this signifies in their in view of their theology, and also ask his support, maybe other members of her new church, to get them to be supportive so that she's not just left in the lurch. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yes, that makes sense. But her family will reject her.
Yeah, that they will for a while. I baptized a Jewish woman. Her family had a funeral for her. And then a year and a half later, they invited her over to celebrate Passover. You know, a lot of times this is an initial expression of frustration, anger, disappointment, betrayal, etc. And then if they are loving people, they will eventually get over that. And then maybe tense, but they'll be able to work through it.
We've got one open line for you at 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986. David is in Detroit watching us on YouTube today. David, thanks for holding. You're on with Father Mitch.
Hi, Father Mitch. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, sir. What can we do for you this fine day?
Thank you. First off, I want to say I'm a huge fan. I'm new to Catholicism.
Oh, welcome.
I've been watching a lot of your videos from the past, and they've been very helpful.
Good.
My question, I have a couple questions, if you can. But my first question is, the church I go to is, they seem to be not really, it's a Novus Ordo church. They don't seem to be very reverent.
Mm-hmm.
As in, like, they clap at the end of the Mass.
Every Sunday?
Yes. This is my eighth Mass I've gone to. And they clap at the end of Mass. I've never heard of anything like that before.
No.
They sing in certain
Protestant
dioceses.
Songs. Not like all the time, but they've sung a couple of Protestant songs before.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wanting to know, like, get your opinion on should I, like...
What?
Oh, we lost him.
He was basically
wanting your opinion on
things.
And
sorry
should he leave his parish over it?
I don't know what happened to you there. Sorry. But let me just say a couple things. First of all, clapping at the end of Mass is not sinful, but it's certainly not the liturgical norm either. I don't know why they're doing it. I'd prefer to sing a hymn of praise as you leave. And that's something that, you know, that's the way it goes. But I don't like it myself. There are some times when the choir is so overwhelmingly, I was at a Mass where the choir concluded with a hymn that was just so overwhelmingly glorious. It was just praise, and everybody had all the clergy had left, and the congregation just stayed through the whole hymn. I mean, that right there is positive. And they applauded, and because they were so moved, and it was moving. But it's not normal. But it's not sinful either. Here's the way I would put it for you. If you are not comfortable with that, again, it's not something forbidden, but if you're not comfortable with it, then I would go, because you don't want to be irritated by something like that shouldn't be a source of irritation. And if it is a source of irritation, then I would go. Now, in terms of singing Protestant hymns, that is not necessarily bad. It's not necessarily evil.
There are some pretty good ones.
Yeah, there really are. And there's some that doctrinally are absolutely fine and oftentimes have wonderful music. They are, especially if they are hymns of praise. Now, there are some that, you know, Catholics could never sing, at least some of the verses, because, squash the Pope, we don't like him, and things like that. But if they're hymns of praise and it's good music, again, there's nothing wrong with that. But It just sounds to me as if you are looking for something that is a little bit more serious and solemn, and you ought to, you really should go to that. I have no, by the way, I don't say that as if, well, that's, you know, if you got to go there, no. No, if you like a more solemn celebration, you should be there for that. And there are, I'm sure in Detroit, there are some parishes that would really be much more comfortable for you. I would try that.
833-288-EWTN is our toll-free number. Next up is Sally, a first-time caller in the great state of North Carolina, watching us also on YouTube today. Sally, you're on with Father Mitch.
Hi, Father. This is the first-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, thank you for doing both.
And I want to congratulate you for being brave and stepping up and taking calls cold like this. It's not an easy thing to do, so congratulations.
Well,
thank you.
I've been doing this a pretty long time. I started doing a show like this on a Protestant radio station 43 years ago. My attitude toward it is I'm not here to make people my friends. I want to explain our Catholic faith, and if they don't like me, then they don't like me. But they didn't like me before either. And plus, I'm just old, and old people don't care.
Well, you know what? I can appreciate that. I'm 72, and I feel your pain.
Well, it's not pain. I like getting old. I am older than you are, you youngsters. Go ahead. You kids have good questions. Okay. Go ahead and tell them.
Okay. Okay, I got one for you.
Sure.
This came up during discussion during confession that I was talking about having issues with feeling anger and distrust with the behavior and the statements that have been coming out of Rome and the Catholic bishops and how they've reacted to several different topics and the things that have been going on in general. And I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I have an idea.
And the priest said to me that, you know, it would be sinful to criticize the church and or the pontiff. And I understand the difference between ex cathedra and doctrinal proclamations that need to be accepted.
Right.
And the opinions of another human being who happens to be in Rome.
Yes.
I guess I want to know, at what point does it become a sinful thing?
Sure.
And is it wrong to offer an objection to, you know, policy or something that's not ex cathedra?
Right. Okay, let me ask you this. Are you married?
I am married.
Have you ever criticized your husband's opinions?
Maybe more than once.
How did I know to go there? And so, because people do have different opinions. Now, I'm sure that there were times when I've heard this from other couples, I don't know you, but I've heard the kind of thing, well, if you weren't so stupid, you wouldn't say something that dumb. You know, that would be really uncharitable, to say the least. And that is not the way you criticize a spouse. You can criticize a spouse, and it can be done extremely charitably. I'm sure that there are a number of very important times when, you know, one or other of you missed a certain element of why kids did what they did, And when one spouse might have been ready to jump all over them, the other one says, wait a minute, you need some more data. And you can do that very charitably or say, you always use your temper and you're just be quiet. You know, two different approaches getting at the same kind of critique. And that, I think, is not a bad analogy for the way we deal with the papacy, the bishops, priests. It's not a sin to disagree with them. It is a sin to be uncharitable. And it's not a sin to present reasons for why something, as you say, an issue that is not, part of defined doctrine of the church. It is reasonable to present good reasons to disagree. Saint Catherine of Siena disagreed with the Pope of her day and told him he was quite incorrect in not staying in Italy. And she got him convinced to change his mind. She did it with complete charity and with the truth behind her.
Yeah, she didn't take it to her sewing circle.
She went to him. And there are certain things that, for instance, there are sometimes people will consider certain points of American policy. The Pope may have made a comment on something we do for our national, what we think is our national good. He may agree or disagree on something. We have a right as a citizen to say, here's some of the data that may be missing, and I disagree with that. But if it's something, for instance, like abortion, that is already defined. And it's an automatic excommunication to take part in an abortion in any way and to promote it. You know, this is something that, that people don't need to have a special decree of excommunication. It's laeta sententiae. And this is the kind of thing where, you have to make those distinctions when you disagree, but doing so with good reason and, laid it out and expressed charitably. That's not sinful. But if it's carping, well, that guy went from another country. No, that's not the way we approach things. Does that help?
Well, it helps. I tend to watch what people do. And that seems to take priority than what they say.
Yes.
I guess what set him off is when I called him the Pope of Ambiguity, because mm-hmm. he often says one thing, but does something contrary.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that to be, it's not confusing because I know what the Catechism says. I had
right.
good nuns.
And,
honestly, Father, the way I solve the problem is I just don't pay attention to anything that comes out of Rome.
Yeah, and that's not always so good either. Here, what I would say on that, we can, there are certain things to say, instead of using a label like I find in the Pope of Ambiguity, I think it'd be more on the charitable side to say this is something that is very ambiguous because your statement here, here, and here is not lining up with this action here, here, and here. And, you can make that, but oftentimes, while we might want to have a shorthand statement of the facts, I think, especially because of his position, we need to have a certain circumspect approach by which we say, okay, I just find this very ambiguous, and that's what I want to deal with.
Right. God bless you. We appreciate it. You got an academic in the house
Yes,
tonight.
We do.
R. Jared Stout, a PhD, and you guys are going to kind of talk about how societies have come and gone down through the ages, huh?
Well, and also, not just that so much, as one of his goals is to talk about how our approach to the Holy Eucharist can change our culture for the better. That goes back to, you know, the hand clapping and things. Are we using forms from the culture that come into the Mass as our own self-expression, or are we allowing the holiness of the Mass to reform culture? So who's forming whom? And the Eucharist, one of his points we'll see tonight, the Eucharist had a tremendous impact on shaping societies, especially where Christianity came to dominate, become the major religion. And we want to see the Eucharist, our celebration of the Eucharist that we'll be talking about in the Synod next week, that is going to be a great opportunity to talk about how do we not just hang on to the people we've got, but how do we transform a society that is itself got lots and lots of extremely serious problems. So that's our goal.
That's tonight, EWTN Live, 8 p.m. Eastern time, right here on EWTN Radio and Television. Next up is Julia in the great state of Washington, listening on the EWTN app. Julia, a couple minutes left with Father Mitch. What's your question today?
Hi, Father Mitch. Hey, I went to the Immaculate Heart Retreat Center about 3 years ago. You were there, and I just wanted to say, if anyone has an opportunity to go to retreat with Father Mitch, it is so worth it. So thank you very much.
That's very kind. Yeah. I remember that retreat. Yeah, that was nice. I like those sisters.
Yeah, it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Hey, so I've been going to daily Mass for about 30 years, and I've gone overseas to Medjugorje, and there I learned that after Mass, you're not allowed to talk. And the nuns, they literally shush you, and they say, get out, you know, shh, or leave.
Yeah.
So over the last couple of decades, people after Mass, they sit and talk, and daily Mass, there's, you know, usually the older, you know, people go.
Yeah, yeah.
And they talk for like, in the church?
No, I'm one of the older people.
Oh, okay, gotcha. I'm like, Father Mitch, you wouldn't do that. Okay,
no.
So my question is this. I sit and pray afterwards, and I'm the only one that does that. And so if I were to say anything to Father, they would know it was coming from me, and I don't want to put anyone out, because I'm sure...
Why not?
Because I get irritated, and I'm sure that things that I do irritate them, too. You know, And
let me ask you this. Do you have kids?
Six.
Okay. Do any of them ever irritate you?
Yes.
Do you ever irritate them?
Yes.
Does that stop you from correcting them?
No, but
okay.
I don't want them to stop going to Mass. You know what I mean?
No. There are a couple alternatives. First of all, I would go talk to Father. This is not something for you to take upon yourself. Talk to Father and say, Father, would there be a way for us to have some quiet in the church after Mass? And there are a couple options. One, could we all have a little room where people can go get a cup of coffee and a cookie and let the church be a place of silent prayer. Secondly, could we also do something like start praying the rosary after Mass so that we're praying out loud and people will start to get the idea this is not the time for chit-chatting, but it's a time for prayer. And thirdly, I would ask Father to maybe give some sermons, not just at daily Mass, but a Sunday Mass, about the importance of making a Thanksgiving.
God bless you, Julia. We appreciate the phone call. Mark, Lisa, I am so sorry, but we are flat out of time. Father, would you leave us with a blessing?
Yeah, and Mark has a great question from Corona. If you would call next week, we'll try to get you at the front of the line. Lord, bless you all and keep you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. On behalf of our host, Father Mitch Packwood, producer Michael McCall, call screener Matt Gubensky, and our social media maven, Mr. Ace McKay. Excuse me, I'm Jack Williams. Thanks so much for tuning in. Back at it tomorrow. Until we get together then, God bless.